Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:20 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is March 1st, and Brent crude was up $8 today. So any day that oil prices rise over 5%, then one has to think that there must be trouble somewhere. And obviously, this is in direct consequence of Russia amplifying its attack on Ukraine, and this is where it's likely to start getting messy. So stock markets are starting to price that in, because there's a clear and present threat to civilians. Not only is that going to take an enormous personal toll on many Ukrainians, but it's going to create some extraordinarily vivid accounts on social media, which are going to further skew the way that both the conventional media and individuals all over the world view this incredible invasion of a sovereign country. So it's going to further enhance sanctions against Russia, and that's obviously taking a toll on oil prices. So we're now north of $100, and this is a trend with some gathering momentum, so there's the potential that it could accelerate further. And of course, because we're not talking about an environment that is necessarily about supply and demand, but more about a reaction to geopolitical events and the very simple fact that we are still in a backwardation, and it's a very steep backwardation, well, then that is something that's going to continue to contribute to a very tight market. So there's the realistic possibility that we're going to see a singular event here, where we see oil prices accelerate in a profound manner. Now, what's particularly interesting is that what we're seeing from the oil producers, because you have Chevron in here today announcing an increased buyback. And the share has broken up and out of what's a really quite lengthy period of consolidation. It's been going sideways, mostly below $140, for nearly 8 years. So this is the conclusion of a very lengthy period of consolidation. ExxonMobil hasn't quite kept up, but it is still quite firm. And then because both BP and Royal Dutch Shell, I guess they're now called Shell, have got investments in Russia, and BP is basically writing down their investment in Rosneft, but hasn't sold it to anybody. So at some point they might be able to add it back into their balance sheet, or it might just disappear altogether, depending on just how bad the relations get. There's the real possibility that foreign holders might be expropriated in Russia from various holdings. So that's something that's obviously going to weigh on the minds of investors as they start to think about what the kind of move that we might see were things to improve. When, for example, we look at the biggest bank in Russia, well, Sberbank is down now to 21 cents. It was trading at $20 at the end of last year. So we're talking about a decline of 99%. And it's still going down. Well, it might get to zero. Who knows? And if it goes from 20 to 10 cents, well, that would be another decline of 50%. And obviously, this is going to be a very difficult phenomenon for investors to pay attention to, because when something falls from $15 to 20 cents in the space of little more than a week, well, some people are going to say this is an impossible thing to trade. Others are going to look at this and say, well, this is perhaps the best value proposition anyone's ever seen in their lives. So one has to regard it as option money, because you could lose everything. But in the event that it goes from 20 cents to $15, just unwinding the decline of the last week because somebody comes along and shoots Vladimir Putin in the head, well, then the Russian stock market would probably open up significantly higher than where it is right now. And we do get these kinds of events in emerging markets where a country will go through a profound period of chaos. So that's what we're seeing in Russia. It's not like there isn't value in Russia. It's an enormous country with a well-educated population, and then it has really impressive mineral wealth. So there will be value in Russia at some point in the future. It's only a question of whether, if one buys today, well, will you still own what you buy today in the future because of the deteriorating state of governance? And then are you bumping up against sanctions? So that's one of the bigger questions, because when somebody now goes to buy something like Sberbank, then they're informed by their broker that it is going to be a sanctioned purchase, and it's around the middle of May when various brokers will no longer be able to make a market in it. So this is a very difficult situation. Does one buy now and then wait for 3 or 4 years, perhaps, and then think, well, if it starts trading again, then I'll be able to realize my shareholding. But the problem is that if one does do that, then you're betting that individual shareholder rights will be respected. And this is the absolute essence of global investing when it comes to governance. Because governance isn't just about democracy. It's about simple things like individual property rights, shareholder, a respect for shareholder rights, and then a free press. And unfortunately, Russia doesn't have those things. Now, they may have them in future, but they don't have them right now, which is why you're getting this value proposition. So we're talking about a very big risk and a very big potential reward in future. Because regardless of what happens in Russia, they're going to need banks. And the systemic banks within any country don't generally go bust. Now, they might get nationalized. We saw that, for example, in Germany. The vast majority of the banks are no longer traded. And there's really only two, Deutsche and Commerzbank. And I think, I'm not even sure if Commerzbank trades in any real liquid manner any longer. But we've definitely seen also banking shares pulling back extremely violently in here today. So, Commerzbank, for example, and I put it up because I couldn't remember whether it had been nationalized or taken out or not, but it had a large downside key reversal last week and big follow-through this week. This is a peak of at least near-term, potentially medium-term significance. It is now testing both the 1,000-day and 200-day moving averages. So this is a potential area of support, but we will need to see a very clear upward dynamic in order to really signal that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. The reality today is that the European banking sector has broken its sequence of higher reaction lows, and it's been on a clear recovery trajectory for nearly 18 months. Or, well, I guess we're creeping up on nearly 2 years now. And with these big downward dynamics, it's looking like this recovery is over for at least the medium term. And then we're also looking at US banks pulling back in a dynamic manner in here today. So there are a couple of different reasons for this. The first is European banks, at least, are a lot closer to Russia and the Ukraine than US banks, so they have pulled back more. And European businesses have a lot more business in Russia than US banks, so that exposes European banks to greater risk and greater risk of write-downs and force majeure type defaults. But then, of course, there's the additional issue of interest rates. Banking shares were starting to perform really quite admirably for most of the last year because there was the clear expectation that interest rates were going to be rising. And that's not happening, or it's at least it's unlikely to happen anytime soon. So the euro today broke lower. And we're starting to see more selling pressure coming into European currencies. And definitely more downward pressure, and there's a sequence of lower rally highs anyway. But the pound is also pausing here in the region of the 1,000-day moving average, but there's downward momentum to potentially push it lower. When we think about the Bloomberg Dollar Index, it's certainly got something of a tailwind because of the flight to safety, and the other big thing that we saw in here today was a really significant move in government bond futures. So the 30-year future was up 2 full points, and now it's really quite clearly testing the sequence of lower rally highs on the future. But when we look at it on the yield, we see clear evidence of resistance in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And if we just go back and look at this over a lengthy period of time, we have lots and lots of examples of where the yield has failed to sustain moves above the 1,000-day moving average, and this might be another. So investors are not just worrying about Russia and Ukraine, they're also thinking that perhaps interest rates aren't going to rise nearly as much as they might have been thinking, and perhaps they won't rise at all. So when we then think about the German 10-year, we'd had a significant move back up into positive territory for the yield in the early part of this year, and now it's back into negative yielding territory. And we've also seen a big move in the gilt yield. So this is very strong commonality, where there's a lot of demand coming through again for government bonds, and not least because people just don't know what the kind of exposure is for equities. They don't know, for example, how much exposure any individual company has to Russia or to the kinds of companies that have exposure to Russia. And then they don't know how much of a growth impact the significant rise in commodity prices is going to have. So there's the real prospect that what we're looking at right now is stagflationary. So investors are looking at the potential that we're at least looking at commodity price inflation, and that it's going to be further stoked not just by the significant jump we've had in oil prices, but also by agricultural prices. Wheat was up 50 in here today. That's the limit. So it was limit up and pushing on to new all-time highs. So this is a really quite, well, I guess not all-time highs. If we go back to 2007, there were a couple of weeks when it was higher than $10, but certainly accelerating at this stage. And obviously, Russia and Ukraine are the major producers of wheat. So this is starting to pull higher commodities like soybeans, and this is consolidating now above the 1600 cent level. And the corn price is also beginning to pick up pace in here as well, because obviously it's tied to oil prices. And in much the same way that corn is tied to oil prices because of ethanol, sugar is also tied to oil prices in Brazil because of ethanol production. So it's also starting to firm in here. But perhaps one of the biggest upward dynamics we saw in here today was in palm oil. And that really took off like a rocket. So we're seeing really spectacular accelerations here in some of these agricultural commodities. And of course, palm oil is Well, it's been going up for quite some time already, but the other big point is that it's used as both biofuel and also for cooking. So basically, it's going to impact consumers on two fronts. So we're seeing also this much greater interest in alternatives. In any kind of bull market for oil, you would naturally expect two themes. One would be thrifting, or alternatively, it would be looking for alternatives to oil, and the second would be greater drilling. Well, if we look at what Chevron is doing in terms of buying back shares, they're not drilling more. They're not allocating greater resources to drill more oil because the fossil fuel industry feels used and abused. They feel like that it doesn't matter what they do, they're never right. So they've decided now that instead of going full on for greater production, they're simply going to try and satisfy their shareholders. So their shareholders are the ones that are ignoring the tenets of ESG and continue to hold oil shares, and they're being rewarded with higher dividends and greater buybacks. So this is an issue because ultimately we need more supply, and we need to circumvent reliance on autocratic dictatorships with extraterritorial ambitions like Russia. And that is an enormous task, particularly for Europe. So not only do they have to invest in huge numbers of wind turbines, both onshore and offshore, and they have to also build large numbers of solar installations, so that's also likely to continue to attract interest. They need to build more LNG accepting facilities. Germany, for example, does not have one. So this is obviously a significant issue right now. And we can think about European natural gas prices, because they're only going to go upwards from here. If Europe stops buying from Russia, then they've got to buy from somebody, and it's going to be more expensive. So we're in a very tight situation for commodities. Now, when we think then about what are the shares that do well in this type of situation, well, obviously resources shares should do well. And anything that is clearly going to benefit from greater investment in new supply. Then technology shares generally do reasonably well when interest rates are rising, provided those companies have solutions in terms of efficiency and thrifting. So if you're a technology company that doesn't have any earnings and completely relies on liquidity, well, you might get at least some benefit from lower interest rates, but there won't be as much speculation in those types of shares because of the inflationary pressures. Instead, what people will want is technology shares that offer solutions to the exceptionally high price of commodities. So then we can think about the performance of those Fangman companies. And they're more or less behaving in line with the market right now and testing the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, when we just zoom in and look at it on a daily basis, it's very choppy. So this choppiness, where it really hasn't gone anywhere for a month, tells us that the market is behaving exactly the same way as those eight large companies. Some will do better than others. So Tesla is the kind of company that offers an alternative to reliance on oil. Now, quite whether they can deliver upon that is another story entirely. And certainly the share has pulled back violently and then recouped some of that loss over the last 3 days. Now, I took my long on the Nasdaq off in here today. I don't like the uncertainty about this higher oil price and the potential that we're going to have greater volatility on Wall Street. But there will be technology companies that benefit. And there will be oil service companies that benefit from this environment. And of course, we also have the defense sector, which should do well in this kind of environment, because there's going to be a lot more investment in armament, and particularly in Europe. So we're certainly in a more a difficult environment where central banks aren't likely to raise rates and might be pressured into providing additional liquidity. And particularly with sanctions on Russia, there's going to be the potential for liquidity issues to arise. So that's certainly beneficial for gold. And it was up $33 in here today. So pulling away now from the $1,900 area. And on this occasion, it held the majority of the gain through the end of the day. So that's much more encouraging action. And we're starting to see that gold shares have broken their sequence of lower rally highs, and this is starting to look like a more convincing recovery overall. Now, the explorers, which would be at the other end of the spectrum in terms of risk, but also exposure to a higher oil, gold price, haven't quite yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs, but they are firming. And it's, I think, quite likely that as we move into the next phase of this secular bull market in gold, that we're going to see the explorers breaking out of what is now an almost 9-year base formation. And they have the capacity to improve in value very significantly as oil pri excuse me, as gold prices continue to rally. And of course, the whole argument about renewable energy is really about substitution of oil for copper. So copper prices continue to steady here. There's the realistic possibility that because of this war and because of the realization finally that Russia can't be trusted, then a lot of the promises that were made at the COP conference in Aberdeen before Christmas might actually get done. And it wasn't looking particularly inviting before this crisis, because nobody was seeming to follow through on their promises. And Saudi Arabia was one of the only places where they really have devoted the money to abide by the promises they made at that COP26 conference. And of course, with oil prices doing well, then the Saudi Arabian market continues to march higher from here. And the Dubai index is also on a recovery trajectory as well. So the Middle Eastern markets are looking up in this environment, and other oil-related markets are also breaking out. So the Norwegian market pushed on to a new all-time high in here today as well. So there is no crisis doesn't come with opportunities. But one thing we can be thinking about is that it's unlikely they're going to raise rates now, which means that we are looking at the potential for stagflation. And in that environment, physical assets and resources are likely to continue to outperform. And the Dow Gold ratio has also rolled over. And this is continuing to look now like gold is back on the front foot. So this is a complete change to the trend that's been evolving for the last century. So we're now looking at an environment where the cycle has changed. And therefore, we need to listen to the fact that it's quite likely that gold is going to outperform the Dow for the lengthy medium term. And that suggests that gold could potentially go quite a bit higher from where it is right now. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.